Previously on Snicktoons. Jamie Sherman from Nerdology 5280 and Extra Life reappeared on the show to cover another classic Gambit episode, and really the first Gambit-centric episode. He came in for season one for Slave Island, which heavily featured Gambit, but he comes back to Snicktoons to cover season two, episode six, Externally Yours, all about Gambit's backstory. So it was a lot of fun to have him back on. And of course, before we do our episode breakdown, we decided, because we're both missing baseball, which should be back by now but isn't thanks to labor strife, we decided we'll just make our own baseball. And so we each drafted a baseball team using only X-Men characters and kind of pit them head to head. I'm still waiting to see who fans think is the better team. So go check that one out if you haven't yet, and stay tuned for this one as a brand new special guest host and I break down season two, episode seven, Time Fugitives, part one. All right, bubs, as you heard at the top of the show, I am back with a very special brand new guest host. And I'm super excited to have this guest host on because as I was going through season two of X-Men the Animated Series and going back and reading all the various entries for each episode and looking up the premiere dates for these episodes, I realized that every single one of these episodes premiered when I was an 8-year-old boy. And I thought that was really cool because today's special guest is my 8-year-old son, Landon. So, Landy, welcome to Snicktoons.
Thanks, Dad.
So, are you excited to be on the show and talking X-Men with me?
Yeah, I love X-Men.
All right. So one thing I've noticed, Landy, whenever I have X-Men on and I'm watching it either for this show or just because I'm watching various episodes that I love, I've noticed if you come in the room, you will sit down and you will sit still for the entire time that X-Men is on and you hardly even talk. I mean, if you and I watch anything together, even Star Wars, you're usually kind of, you know, well, you're yapping through all the episodes or all the movies or whatever. But if we're watching X-Men, you sit quietly and you watch the whole thing.
Yeah, I guess that is pretty true.
So what is it about X-Men that seems to capture your little 8-year-old imagination so much?
Well, it's just, in X-Men, it's just easy to like imagine a story that they've never done. And it's just awesomer than most things.
It's awesomer than most things? Okay, well, I'm not going to argue with you about that because that is 100% factual. So another thing that we like to do, other than just watching X-Men together, is we like to build and collect Legos. And there's an upcoming X-Men Lego set in only a few months, well, not even a few months, in less than 1 month from today. It was supposed to come out January 1st of this year. They've pushed it back to April 1st. And you know what set I'm talking about, right, buddy?
Yeah, it's the Wolverine mech.
Yeah, the Wolverine mech. And I know that you and I are both super excited for that set. I know that you and Maxton don't even have, well, I think actually you do have one, but neither of you really have your own Wolverine minifigure, at least not a cool one. You have the little one from the Mighty Micro guy that's, you know, got the short legs and stuff.
Yeah, and then at some point we also custom made Wolverine in like his black suit, though.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you guys made like a patch era Wolverine. Obviously not the Wolverine in the white suit, you know, the suit and tie and all that with the patch, but you mean the Wolverine that has the black suit and the red sash and everything when he fights in Madripoor.
Actually, we mean like X-Force Wolverine.
Oh, so that's the Wolverine that you guys made. That's pretty cool. All right, so Landy, since you and I both love X-Men and we both love Lego, we thought it would be fun for us to do a top five of X-Men Lego sets that we would love to see. Now, it's not that any of these sets have been announced or anything like that, and we're just sitting here like, oh, these are the ones that we were going to buy. No, these are sets that we came up with in our own minds and that we thought would be really cool if someday Lego is able to make sets like this. But, Landy, before we jump into our top five comparison, usually what I do whenever I have a brand new guest on the show is I ask them if they remember their first introduction to X-Men. So I know that you're still pretty little, and maybe you don't even remember a time when you didn't know what the X-Men were, but do you remember your first introduction to X-Men?
No, I feel like I was born knowing about X-Men.
Yeah, that's probably true. I know I have lots of memories of like snuggling with you on the couch when you were a little baby, holding you, and watching X-Men on DVD before, you know, Disney Plus came out, and it was just so much easier to stream it. So you've probably just grown up always knowing what the X-Men are.
Yeah, I just feel like I woke up as a little baby in my first moments, and the first thing I ever looked at was a TV screen randomly playing there was X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good possibility that that did happen. All right, so you don't remember your first X-Men memory, and I honestly don't remember the first time I had you watch X-Men. Probably, like I said, it was just on, and you were there. So who is your favorite X-Men character, then?
Well, it kind of shifts a lot from Wolverine to Cyclops.
Interesting. See, I had a guest on my show for season one, and her two favorite characters were Storm and Rogue. And I was telling her that your favorite characters were Storm and Rogue, because when you were a little boy, every time you would watch the episodes, you know, I'd come in, I'd say, "Ooh, what are you watching, buddy?" You'd say, "X-Men, Dad." And I'd say, "Cool, who's your favorite character?" And you'd always say Rogue and Storm. That was always your answer, no matter what.
Well, it was more Rogue than it was Storm.
Oh, okay. Well, I really like Rogue, so I can understand that. Although Cartoon Storm is like the best version of Storm. So either way, if those were your favorite characters, you have great taste. But you say now it's between Wolverine and Cyclops?
Yes.
This is because you're trying to copy me?
No, it's just Wolverine and... Well, one, Wolverine is very awesome and dope. Two, Cyclops is just a good character.
Really, most people don't like Cyclops, especially because of the way he is in the cartoon, where he's kind of a wet blanket. He always seems to have not necessarily something negative to say, but he always just seems to be so serious all the time. You don't seem to care that he's too serious and that he doesn't like to have fun or anything?
Well, I feel like that's good, because then he's just more focused on getting the mission done. But, I mean, I didn't exactly like it how he just hates Iceman, though.
Okay. Well, that's an episode that's a lot later on, you know, in this series. But one of my favorite episodes. If you've watched, and I know that you've watched most of the seasons, geez, most of the episodes of all the seasons with me, and since you've been following along, he kind of hates Gambit, doesn't he? Every time he talks to Gambit so far in the first two seasons, he's kind of, you know, being a little argumentative with him.
For a second, I thought you talked about Iceman. I almost said X-Men. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, he was in the first season talking to Gambit? Oh, he's talking about Cyclops.
Yeah, every time Gambit's on screen, if he's sharing screen time with Cyclops, Cyclops is on his case about whatever, you know, something that Gambit says or something that Gambit doesn't say. Cyclops always seems to take offense to whatever it is.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't like his name, Gambit.
I guess, maybe. All right, man. Okay, so Wolverine and Cyclops are your favorites. Very interesting. I did not know that. I was still under the impression that your favorite characters were Rogue and Storm. Although, either way, any of those four, you can't really go wrong because they're all such great characters.
Yeah, Storm's kind of now my least favorite. Not because I don't like her. It's just because everyone else I just feel like is awesomer than her, especially Wolverine.
Wow. Okay. All right. I think those are fighting words in some circles, buddy. So you're gonna have to be prepared to fight about that. But oh well. All right. So we've determined your favorite X-Men and your first X memory. Unfortunately,
you're still too little. Maybe as you get older and those memories transfer to your long-term memory, you'll be able to remember and you can tell me. Hopefully we'll still be podcasting in like 20 years and you can say, Dad, I finally remember the first time, but I doubt it.
Yeah, well, apparently there's going to be like a sequel to this. I really hope it's going to be in the same graphics because it would be weird if we have like 90s turning into like live action.
Yeah, that would be very strange. But yeah, this is supposed to be a cartoon. It's called X-Men 97. And yeah, it's going to be an animated series as well. And all the original voice casts coming back.
Yeah, but I really hope that's still in like the same animation.
I would hope that they would realize one of the reasons why so many fans loved the show is because of the animation. Was it as good as the animation in Batman the Animated Series? Maybe not, but it was still pretty good. And it helped, I think, with the tone of the show and everything. So yeah, I think it would be foolish if they, veered off of that track. But I think if you're ready, Landy, we can jump into our top five most wanted Lego X-Men sets. What do you say?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. So usually I let my guest go first. What we do is they say their number five, then I say mine, then they say their four, all the way down to each of our number ones. So of the five Lego sets that you have, created in your mind, what is your number five most wanted X-Men Lego set?
Well, I kind of didn't do most wanted because I already kind of struggled just thinking of these sets because they've already done a lot of X-Men sets. Anyway, but my first one I thought would be Marvel World from X-Force.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what would the set be like?
Well, it would kind of just be like a big set, though. It would be like a carnival set, except for, it'd be like designed to be like the carnival that is run by the villain named Arcade.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that would be pretty cool. I know that they've done some sets like that with the Joker, where they've done Joker's Carnival. So yeah, I think a set with Arcade would be pretty cool. What kind of minifigures do you think would be good in that set?
Well, definitely Arcade, because he's like the main bad guy when it comes to that place.
Of course.
And then it would probably have like the X-Force. Probably not including Cable, because they've done a lot of Cables. And like, wait, they haven't actually really done any Cables. So probably including Cable.
So Arcade and Cable. Anybody else? Who else do you think should be in that set?
Why not you go on? I'm thinking of the name.
Okay, well, real quick, if you're going with X-Force and you have Cable, maybe Cable, Domino, maybe Warpath or Cannonball or any of those?
Yeah, I was just thinking of the name of the one girl who's like a wolf.
Oh, Wolfsbane?
Yes.
Yeah, she would be cool to have in that set. I would love to see a Wolfsbane minifigure. And they can have like a swappable head, where in one case she looks like her regular face, and then the next one you can swap it out and she has like a werewolf face.
That would be cool.
All right. I think that's a very good set. Very interesting. You didn't have that one written down before, so I guess you're just coming up with that right off the top of your head, huh?
Yeah, I was going to write that one down, but like then I had to start school and I didn't have enough time to write it down. Oh. And then like right after school, I jumped on and did Three Heroes on like a thing. And then you're like, well, it's time to start podcasting. So I was never able to actually write it down.
Oh, okay. A pesky dad with his timelines, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number five set would be the Senator Kelly kidnapping set. And so the one thing I did with all of my sets, Landy, and I didn't do this on purpose, but after I had written down like the first four, I kind of realized what I was doing. I was thinking of some of my favorite storylines from the comic book, but when I was selecting minifigures to put into each of these sets, I was kind of basing all my selections on the cartoon series. So that's what I ended up doing. So it's kind of like a melding of the cartoon and all of my favorite storylines from the comics. And so this one is kind of based on Days of Future Past, but it doesn't have any of the sad, you know, future dystopia stuff where all the X-Men are dead, because that wouldn't be very fun for a kid to play with. So this one is called Senator Kelly's Kidnapping. And the minifigures would have Mystique and Senator Kelly.
Well, definitely Gambit, because he fought Gambit Mystique.
That's right. So I have Gambit, and then I also have Bishop. And so those would be the four minifigures that came in the set. And then the set itself would just be like a brick-built Sentinel. And I would want the Sentinel to look kind of like the Giant Man figure that was the brick-built figure that they used for the Captain America Civil War airport attack, where instead of just having a minifigure that was really big, you actually had to build this figure, but then it looked just like a minifigure, but just giant size. And so I think it would be cool if we had like a Sentinel that was about that big as well. And then, yeah, like I said, Gambit and Bishop and Mystique and Senator Kelly, and that is my number five.
That sounds pretty good.
Well, of course it does. It's X-Men and it's Lego.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure actually yesterday when I was looking through the episodes to think of all of these, I forgot, but I was going to put on Days of Future Past because I kind of just really like that two-part thing. I love how it's a two-part thing, but it's kind of like a three-part thing.
Yeah, very much. All right, so we've each done our number five sets. So let me hear, what would be your number four most wanted X-Men Lego set, buddy?
Okay, my number four. I mean, of course, I didn't actually put these in like special order. I just put them in the order I thought of them. So it would actually be Wolverine versus Silver Samurai.
Okay, cool. And would that set be kind of like the movie The Wolverine, where Silver Samurai is like a big kind of mech suit? Or would this be more of a Wolverine minifigure versus a Silver Samurai minifigure, and then the set itself would be like inside of a dojo in Japan or something like that?
Yeah, it'd be more based off of the episode in the show where he fights Silver Samurai.
Okay, so he's in like a little Japanese village?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That would be fun, because then you can build like a couple little buildings, and then you can have a Wolverine and a Silver Samurai minifigure, and then you can have like a couple Japanese villager guys.
Yeah, and then we'd have Wolverine's evil like girlfriend. Whoops, I'm thinking of Solo.
Okay. Wolverine's evil girlfriend. I don't remember Wolverine having an evil girlfriend, but he does have Yukio, who kind of is a villain, sort of. So that would be cool. I would love to have a Yukio minifigure as well, or like a Mariko minifigure even.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Mariko. I can't think of her name. Also, I said the like, oh wait, whoops, I'm thinking of Solo. I just did that, I guess, to be funny.
Okay. All right. I like it. Wolverine versus Silver Sam. I mean, I'm never going to say no to anything with Wolverine. And it's awesome that you picked Silver Samurai, because I'm actually covering Silver Samurai stories on, you know, the proper Talk and Snick show. So it's not on Snicktoons, but on my Wednesday podcast. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I also hope to be on that one day.
Oh, wow. Okay. Tall wish list that you have here. All right. So my number four set, and again, I was originally making this one to be more comic accurate. I was originally including minifigures from the comic, but this is about the time I realized that I was actually including minifigures from the cartoon and stuff instead. And so I changed it up a little bit. I originally had Mr. Sinister's lab, and it was going to have Mr. Sinister and some Morlock minifigures and some Marauder minifigures, but I switched it up. So this is Mr. Sinister's Savage Land lab, and it comes with Mr. Sinister, Sauron, Brainchild, Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Jubilee.
For a second, you said Sal one, and I'm like, wait, what? It's X-Men, not Lord of the Rings.
Oh, man. When you start actually reading the comics and you get to the Sauron introduction, do you know why he picks that name?
Why?
Because he loves the Lord of the Rings, and he's saying, like, I'm so evil, I should name myself after the most evil character in literature. And so he chooses the name Sauron. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That's actually pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Also, it's funny that one of the bad guys' names is Brain Salad, because the show I used to watch that was an educational show was called Brain Child.
Oh, well, there you go. So in the cartoon and in the comic books, Brain Child is one of the Savage Land mutates who I believe was created by Magneto, but then eventually he serves Mr. Sinister when Mr. Sinister kind of moves into the Savage Land. And I think he will show up in the two-part finale for this season. So I'm looking forward to getting to that, although I don't think the Sauron story comes until season 3. So with that, should we move into our number 3 sets?
Yes, which is funny because you just said season 3 and now we're moving into our 3s.
Yep.
Okay, my next one, number 3, would just be Deadpool's Taco Truck. And When I said this, my brother even was like, "Meh, Landy, I'm proud of you."
Yeah, you got. I don't even know why, but you guys seem to be Deadpool obsessed, and it's not like I let you watch the movie or read Deadpool comics or anything. But you guys just both really like that character. But I love that Deadpool's taco truck. I would totally buy that. What minifigures would you want to see in that set?
Well, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure if I'm going to do Deadpool, which would be cool because this would be like a cheap set. So It'd be cool seeing Deadpool in a cheap set.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is going to be a little playable set that's just his taco truck and him and maybe like a little taco stand too. But maybe I'd also have like Deadpool, Domino, and Cable, of course, because I've never seen anything that has to do with the movies. It's not based off the movies, it's just based off of the funny stuff with Deadpool, which is why me and Bubba like Deadpool, because in the Spider-Man show he has an opponent, which is a very funny opponent. He says a lot of funny jokes that me and Nathan always crack up about.
Yeah, and he's really funny in the Lego game, huh? Lego Marvel Super Heroes 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too bad he wasn't in the second game. Actually, I probably shouldn't be saying that because we haven't beat it. Maybe Deadpool actually plays in story mode.
Yeah, maybe. And they did give us Gwenpool in the second one, so that was good.
And Miles and basically all the other Spider-Mans.
Yep. All right, buddy. So I like that for number 3, Deadpool's taco truck. Very good choice. For my number 3 set that I would like to see is I went with the Apocalypse Attack. And so this set would feature an Apocalypse Big Fig. So instead of the minifigure, he'd be the big fig, kind of like about the size of the Hulk big figure that you can get in some of the sets that came out. So it would have it would have Apocalypse as a big fig. It would have an Archangel slash Death figure. So it would be, you know, the pink and blue uniform with the blue face and the blonde hair. Or you could take off his hair and like flip his head forward, you know, flip his head around. And that would be his like skull mask that he wears. So that would be the Archangel slash Death figure. And then I would also want to have Rogue and Storm in this set because, you know, in this one, Archangel can fly or Death can fly. And so in the cartoon, they usually have either Rogue or Storm going up against him. I think it was Rogue in the main episodes. So far, Rogue's been the one that's kind of opposed Death. So those would be who I would have in this set. And if it was a big enough set, I would want to include like his ship or a pyramid or Stonehenge from the cartoon. And then also maybe even one or two extra horsemen with their little steed. That would be pretty cool. So it wouldn't, you know, war or pestilence or famine. Not all, it doesn't have to be all of them, but at least one other horsemen as well.
It would also be funny if you had like an apocalypse made out of like glass, so it's like when he's teleporting away.
Oh yeah, that'd be pretty cool. They could do like a transparent one or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Landy, let's jump into our number two sets. So what is your number two most wanted X-Men set?
Well, it says that it would be a minifigure scale Sentinel that would come with, anyway, it would look like the buildable action figures from Lego and maybe a few studs and bricks so he can like extend his arm really far to grab something. And also the figures would be like a Sentinel like we see in Lego Marvel Superheroes, and Wolverine just so he can have like the Sentinel fight Wolverine.
Nice. Well, I like anything with a Sentinel, and I like that we each had different ideas on how we would like to see our Sentinels. If you play Lego Marvel Superheroes, number one, you actually do go up against a couple Sentinels, and they just look like minifigure shaped, but it was just very large. So that's where I came up with the idea of the brick built minifigure, like we saw with Giant Man. But you're kind of coming up with almost just a different idea altogether, which I think would be cool because it could be a lot more futuristic looking if you do it as a buildable action figure. Plus, then you can also display it as a separate thing if you wanted to as well.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Also, if you like want a buildable action figure, maybe you can like buy this and throw it on yourself and say it's a buildable action figure because it is.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right. So for me, Landy, my number two most wanted X-Men Lego set would be the Weapon X Lab Escape. And so this would come with the Weapon X kind of like the tank that they put Logan into where they gave him his adamantium. And it would be kind of similar to the Darth Vader transformation set that they did for Star Wars about 5 years ago or so, where you had like this version of Anakin, you know, a minifigure of Anakin who was all burnt up and damaged. And then you would like turn a little knob and it would flip the table over and then it would be Darth Vader. So this would be something similar to that, where inside this tank looking thing, you actually have like a Logan minifigure, and then you would flip it over and then it would be the Weapon X minifigure. So you can have him kind of jump out of the tank this time. Now he's got his claws, and it would also have, you know, the cool Weapon X little helmet that he has to wear, and it would have some cords that come off of it. And then in addition to the Logan and the Weapon X minifigures, I would also want to have the Professor and Dr. Cornelius and at least two like Weapon X security guards, so that Weapon X would have stuff to fight against as he escapes from the Weapon X lab.
That sounds cool. Also, it would be cool if for displaying purposes, you could have like the tank with another piece that was like broken a little bit, so you can have like it so the tank's broken.
Oh yeah, I know that they've done some stuff before where it has like the breakaway glass, so you can kind of press a button on the back and it will like throw the glass. So you know, you put Logan down, you flip him over, you stand him up as Weapon X, you hit the thing and it kind of breaks the glass down. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, I like those ideas. And that takes us, Landy, then into our final sets, our number one most wanted X-Men Lego sets. Go ahead.
Mine would be Iceman's mech would be the title. And it would just come with like a cool Iceman and maybe like a goon.
A goon?
This one's based off of, like, it's kind of a mix of the Wolverine mech that was coming that we mentioned at the beginning, and us, and it would also be a mix of a Zane mech that I have.
Oh, is that one of your Lego Ninjago sets?
Yeah, and it's funny because Zane's also the white ninja, and soon changes into the Titanic Ninja. Oh. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's the Titanium Ninja.
Yeah.
And anyway, his power is ice, so it's funny that the Iceman mech would be a little inspired off of that.
Now, let me ask you this then. Since Iceman can make stuff out of ice, would it be cool to build this mech to look like a giant ice suit that he's built for himself? Or do you think it should still stay as a mech suit?
Well, I think it would be cool if it was like an ice suit. And maybe it would also be made out of like see-through pieces. Ooh. So it looks even more like ice.
Yeah.
And maybe it would also have like a few like ice studs on like a thing that Iceman can hold, and like an ice cage for like the goon for him to like put him in once he defeats. And I'm saying ice a lot.
Well, yeah, when you talk about a character as cool as Iceman, you're definitely going to be saying ice quite a bit. All right, I like that. That's a cool idea, and it's just, you know, a fun little set. I really like Iceman. All right, and you're about to see that I agree with you, because my number one X-Men set would be a massive set. You know, this would be like as big as the Daily Bugle Spider-Man set that we got last summer, or as big as the Home Alone house, a really big set. You know, that was like a $300, $250 set. I know the Spider-Man set, I said it was 300. It was 3,772 pieces. It came with 23 minifigures. And the Home Alone set was $250. It had 3,955 pieces, and it had 6 minifigures. So I would love to get an X-Mansion set that was, you know, almost 4,000 pieces, somewhere around this ballpark, 3,700, 3,900, a lot of pieces. And the minifigures that I think are must includes, you know, must haves, even if they don't go all the way up to, you know, 23 minifigures, even if they only do 7 or 8,
yeah.
I believe that we would have to have in this set Professor X.
Definitely.
A big fig of Juggernaut.
Like in the Lego Marvel Superheroes. And again, definitely.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of Juggernaut's storylines in the comic books have to do with him coming and destroying the X-Mansion. So I would want like a portion of the wall to be able to get knocked out, when Juggernaut runs through the wall and the X-Men have to come fight him. His appearances early on, he was actually fighting with the original X-Men. And even though I already have an Archangel / Death figure, and even though I already have Jean and Cyclops in a different set, I've chosen to, in addition to Professor Xavier, also having Beast, Angel, not Archangel, but Angel with his feather wings, and Iceman. So I would want to have at least those three X-Men in here with this set. Like I said, a big figure of Juggernaut. But another one of my favorite storylines, Landy, that has to do with the mansion, and we saw it not just in the comics, but in the cartoon as well, is the attempted rehabilitation of Sabretooth by Xavier. And one of my favorite moments in the comics when Sabretooth was being held at the mansion is he gets out and he has to fight against Psylocke. And Psylocke has been in the cartoon, and she's supposed to be a big part of X-Men 97. She's supposed to be joining the team. So I would love to, in addition to the three X-Men with Xavier and Juggernaut, I would also want to have a Sabretooth and a Psylocke minifigure. I mean, I would love to have, you know, the New Mutants in here and Magneto, even though we've already had Magneto in existing X-Men sets, but that's what I would want to see in this X-Men mansion. And just like the way they did the Home Alone house, I would want, you know, the mansion itself to be maybe two stories with a basement part that is also the danger room.
Also, it'd be cool if this was like the Jabba's palace, how it had an like attachment, like the Wanker pit, but it would be like the factory in which they like do the plague.
Oh yeah, from the cartoon episode that we're gonna break down after our Lego talk. Yeah, that would be cool. I think the rooms in the mansion, we would have to have like I said, the danger room. We would have to have, for Xavier, we'd have to have the Cerebro room. Now, it doesn't have to be like the movies where it's a big, as Wolverine describes it, a big round room. It could be more like the, you know, Cerebro kind of war room that we see in the cartoon. I would also want a Beast lab and maybe a regular classroom, and then maybe one or two bedrooms that have, you know, maybe Cyclops's bedroom or something like that, so that we get to see some posters and some books that would be for Cyclops, just, you know, since he was the first X-Man. And then since we also have Angel and Iceman in the set, I think one of the, at the top of the roof, we should have like some icicles that are hanging off for, you know, because Iceman, and then maybe just have some feathers or something like that, something pretty simple that we would like put on the roof as decorative pieces. And it would show that like Angel's been flying above the roof of the mansion.
Also, it'd be cool if like in the Beast lab, we have like studs on the wall that that Beast can like walk on. Also, it'd be cool if we have Colossus, because Colossus is also always classing off with Juggernaut.
Yeah, you're right. He clashes with them a lot of times, especially when we have them in the same cartoon episode or in the video games and stuff. Now, I know that there was an X-Mansion level in Lego Marvel Super Heroes 1, so I'd be okay if it looked something like that. But again, it just had the figures that I mentioned. They can also throw in, like, just for good measure, if they needed additional heroes and villains, we can throw in like Emma Frost and Sebastian Shaw, Mastermind, you know, some of those characters and stuff, people that have come to the mansion before, and a couple other X-Men characters too.
Yeah, also it'd be cool if we have like a bunch of attachments. Well, we could also do that and like even like a new X-Jet set that could attach onto the X-Mansion.
Yeah, a new X-Jet, because we do have the one, you know, but it's a somewhat old set, kind of hard to find now. So something like that, that would, you know, the hangar with the new X-Jet, that would be pretty cool. Well, Landy, I gotta say, buddy, I really liked all of the sets that you came up with. Your arcade world, your murder world by arcade, that one really threw me off, because I, like you said, you didn't have that one written down. So that one threw me for a loop, and it was surprising. It was pretty cool though, because yeah, I think with the way that Murder World goes, with all of the different contraptions and you know, traps and stuff, that would make for a pretty fun Lego set.
Wait, I forgot one thing. Also, in all of these sets, we should probably throw in Batman. He's a good X-Men.
All right. You're off the show.
Not X-Men. I mean, not Batman.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not actually off the show, though, right?
No, of course not. You get to stay on. All right, buddy. So that is actually going to cover our first half of today's show. Do you have anything else X-Men related you want to say before we jump into our episode breakdown?
Yeah.
Okay, what?
Well, I would like to quote Wolverine and say just, "I boobs."
All right. All right, so let's get our episode breakdown underway. All right, for today's episode, for those of you who've been following along, we are going to cover Season 2, Episode 7 of X-Men, the Animated Series. This episode is called Time Fugitives, Part 1. It was written by Michael Edens, and it aired December 11th, 1993. So, Landy, usually what I do is I let my guest kind of start and break down the first scene. And then we usually take turns a couple scenes at a time explaining what's going on in the episode and just kind of providing some commentary and stuff. But I think since this is your first time on the show, what I will do is I will break down every scene. And then after I break down each scene, you and I can kind of talk about the fun stuff that was going on during that scene. Does that work for you, buddy?
Yes.
All right. So this episode starts with a futuristic battle in a ruined city. We see some brightly colored robots kind of strewn about that looks like they'd been damaged. And we have these weird, like, Terminator looking things that are kind of walking around. And we see one of them scanning some rubble and it spots Cable. And then on the screen, we see the words like place, New York City, time, 3,999 AD. So we see that this scene is 2,000 years in the future.
Well, that's even... Well, also the Statue of Liberty all of a sudden looks pretty creepy. And everyone used to call her beautiful. I wonder what they'd be saying if they saw her then.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it would still be standing after 2,000 years, but, you know, I guess it's some pretty impressive architecture. So at that point, Cable pulls out his BFG and he takes a few of these robots out. And at that point, Cable's, lieutenant, she comes running over and she's like, Cable, you know, the Apocalypse's forces are defeating us. You know, we have to retreat. And at that point, Cable says, like, oh, no, if they're beating us, then, you know, we need to go on the counteroffensive. And then they start fighting back against the robots. And at that point, we see Apocalypse himself. And he arrives and gives his really cool speech.
Wasn't his really cool speech the, it was whether the, I will destroy this earth and then... we build it from his asses, or was it the I am as far beyond mutant? Wait, he was fighting mutants, so probably not that one.
Yeah, no, it's the first one, you know, the from the ashes of this world, we will build a better one. You know, it's kind of his catchphrase at this point.
Yeah, that or the other one I said.
Yep. So as he's saying these things, we start to see this like whirlwind, kind of like a tornado looking thing with lightning coming out of it, starts forming. And Apocalypse immediately is like, oh dear, a temporal storm, which I think is hilarious that he just immediately knows, like, oh, yep, timeline's getting all messed up. And so it flashes back over to Cable. Oh, actually, inside the tornado, we actually get a glimpse of Bishop. So anyone who had been watching this series and had seen those the two-part episode from season one that had Bishop, we would recognize him as, you know, the time-traveling mutant. And then at that point, Cable asks he has like this little box thing that he pulls out of his belt and he asks, like, what is happening? What's Apocalypse doing? And the little box thing responds by saying, it's a temporal storm and it's resetting the timeline. Something in the past has changed. And so what happens is once the present resets, Cable and everyone else, as he knows it, will cease to exist. But she tells him maybe he can stop the event, which starts with a time traveler from the 21st century. So basically what she's saying is something in the past has been changed, and it was changed by what appears to be a time traveler from the 21st century. And of course, that sets up our scene change. And at that point, we go to the year 2055, and we see Bishop. And at this point, Bishop is arriving back in his timeline, or I guess back in the near future, from having prevented the assassination of Senator Kelly in the two-part Days of Future Past that I just mentioned from season one. So at the end of that episode, Landy, what happened is we saw Bishop return to his timeline only to see that things were still really bad. And so now we get more of that scene. So Bishop arrives and he's talking to Forge. And he's like, I stopped the assassination, Forge. Why is everything still so bad? And Forge is like, well, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that the plague is still ravaging the world. And Bishop's like, yo, what the heck are you talking about? What plague? And so Forge is like, yeah, right after the assassination, Senator Kelly gets elected as president. And he has this platform of being pro-mutant. And that angers a lot of his followers who didn't like mutants. And eventually what happened is there's this plague that hit and mutants were blamed for starting the plague. And that's why this year is still so bad. you know, you stopped the assassination, but it didn't make things better. Instead of Sentinels wiping everybody out, it was a plague. So what do you think of that scene, Landy?
Well, I think it's very interesting, and I think it's also pretty funny that Cable's like, then counterattack, we're not retreating. It's whether we retreat or we win or we die. Anyway, Temple Storm comes, okay, I'm retreating.
Yeah, we either fight or die, and he's like, oh, no, wait, no, we actually can't escape. Let's do that instead. Oh, man, we see that a lot in comics and movies and stuff where they're like, based on the information right now, this is our last stand. Oh, wait, nope, something just happened and now we can escape. Cool.
Yeah.
What did you think of all the Bishop stuff?
Well, it was an interesting sequel to part two, and we see the skeleton of Wolverine, which I think will be explained in the end of this episode.
Yeah, maybe. That was an interesting thing because when Bishop gets back to his timeline, he mentions, you know, I told the X-Men and we stopped the assassination. And then Forge is like, X-Men, what are you talking about? And yeah, there's like a little canister, not a canister, but there's like a little area in his like lab that has this adamantium skeleton and you can see the claws. So you know that that's Wolverine's skeleton. So yeah, that's pretty messed up. To have a whole world where the X-Men, you know, didn't happen, you know, that whole thing, the X-Men were defeated or whatever.
I thought it was funny that that it's like, couldn't the X-Men find out a way to stop it? X-Men, what are the X-Men? Get me back!
Yeah, he's immediately like, all right, send me back right now. Like, no questions asked or whatever, just I'm going back and I'm stopping this plague. Like, I have got to do this. Like, I kind of feel bad for Bishop. You know, he came back to the past to prevent his future, and he succeeds in his mission only to go back to his timeline and to see that things are either just as bad or maybe even worse. That's got to make you feel pretty bad about, you know, everything that's happening and be like, why even, what's the point? Why even try? If I'm just going to fix everything and only for it to just keep being as bad as it is, like, man, that sucks. Are we that live in this time just destined to live through a really bad time? You just feel bad for the guy. So after that scene, Landy, we come back to Bishop arriving in our time, right? And he sees some newspapers about the plague and he's like, oh man, like the Forge didn't even send me far enough back. The plague has already happened. So he's like, I better tell the X-Men. And he heads off, presumably towards the mansion. And so because we have the scene change, now it takes us still in the present day to a mall. And we see Storm and Jubilee. And it looks like Jubilee needed some help with her, I guess, a CD player. Like, I grew up in this time, Landy. I grew up in the 90s. I know all about the technology from the 90s. Walkmans, Discmans, VCRs, all that stuff. And I don't know what device she had. I think the clerk refers to it as a player, so I'm going to guess it's either a cassette player or a CD player. But knowing how cool Jubilee is, I'm going to guess it's a CD player.
Well, we hear her. Well, I listened closely, and when she's talking to Storm, she's like, I need to get my CD player fixed.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you for that validation, buddies. Now I feel like I'm really good at watching X-Men.
Also, I think it's a little funny how Bishop, as we can tell, lands in like the exact same area he did last time.
That's right. Yeah, the exact same alley, because he even looks around and goes, well, back here again.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So while she's at the mall, Jubilee goes into the electronics store to ask the clerk if he can help fix her CD player. And as she's walking into the store, Storm's like, hey, I'm going to go hang out in the bookstore. Like, come find me when you're done. And she heads off. And as the two of them kind of split up and Jubilee goes into the electronics store, there's this like shady kind of dude in a suit just like hanging out at the mall. And he recognizes Jubilee as she walks by. And so he starts scrolling. He's got like an Apple Watch somehow from, I guess he's also a time traveler. So he starts scrolling through all the photos on his watch until he finds a picture of Jubilee. And he's like, yep, she's a mutant. And so Jubilee goes into the electronics store and she finds the store clerk and says, hey, you know, my player broke again. Could you take a look at it and see if it can be fixed? So the guy's like, yeah, well, give me a sec. I'm going to go in the back and I'll take a look at it. So he takes the CD player into the back room. And as he's back in there by himself, that dude who recognized Jubilee, he goes in there and he kind of slowly opens the door real quiet like, and he puts this like gun device thing and he shoots this gas into that room, and the guy gets really sick. Anyway, so the dude, the shady guy, he leaves before anyone sees what he's doing. And the store clerk comes back to Jubilee and he's like, unfortunately I can't fix it this time around. And then he starts coughing and he's sweating. And Jubilee's like, hey, what's the matter? And he's like, I don't feel so good. And as soon as he says that, the guy that had like shot him with that gas, he comes running up and he points at Jubilee and he's like, you're one of those mutant plague carriers. And he's starting to like get all the people in the store to kind of form a mob around Jubilee and be like, yo, we don't want no filthy mutants in here spreading disease and all that. And so Jubilee starts to try to fight back, at least just so that she can get out of the store. Luckily, all this commotion, Storm is able to hear it. It gets her attention and she runs out and realizes that Jubilee is not necessarily under attack, but she's kind of being ganged up on by this, soon to be angry mob. And so she puts a bunch of fog into the store and she runs in and she grabs Jubilee and they are able to escape.
I think it's weird that Jubilee doesn't like attack the guy who's randomly going into the store. And well, like he goes into it and then when he comes out, he like feels sick. And also I was going to say something else, but
well, just say it, man.
I don't want to say it. It's just I'm trying to think of what I was going to say.
Oh, you forgot what you were going to say. Yeah, that happens. Well, we'll keep going. And if you remember, then you can jump in and say it. Otherwise, you can just comment on this next scene because it's pretty quick. So we're immediately back at the mansion and Beast is running some tests on Jubilee to see, if she's actually sick or whatever, because she's kind of telling him like, I was by this guy and then he got sick and they were calling me this mutant plague carrier and stuff. But, Beast does all of his tests and he couldn't tell if anyone was sick or not, or not that he couldn't tell, but he could tell that Jubilee wasn't sick. And so he just kind of tells her, and then he decides that he's going to go check out the hospital himself because he thought it was kind of fishy, that everyone immediately kind of jumped and was blaming her. And then when he checked her, she wasn't sick at all. And so he kind of heads out and he goes to the hospital where the store clerk is being treated. And he actually like breaks into the lab there and he finds the guy's sample and he's looking at it and he's like, oh, this is fascinating. And then we get another scene change. Did you remember what you were going to say, buddy?
Yes.
Okay.
When Storm was like, bring forth the mist to bind the hatred. But they didn't know that she was a mutant. They're probably like, that girl's crazy.
Yeah. If they don't know that she's a mutant or they don't stick around to see that she does, in fact, bring the mist forth, they would probably be like, what? This lady is kind of intense. She just kind of came out of the middle of nowhere and started yelling at nature.
Yeah.
All right. So after Beast goes to the labs, we go back to the X Mansion. And this time it's Cyclops and Jean, and they're kind of in like the Cerebro room and they're watching the news. And so Cyclops calls in the rest of the adult X-Men, so Rogue and Gambit and Storm and Wolverine, and he calls them in and they're watching this news report live. And what happened is the city decided that they were going to force all mutants into a quarantine. And so we see this news story where health workers from New York are boarding up this building where all these mutants are living. They kind of push the mutants back inside and board it up and everything. And of course this really angers the X-Men because it's completely unfair. And it seems that to this point, scientifically unfounded to be blaming mutants for what's going on. And of course that's also a violation, of people's civil liberties to just lock them up without their consent or anything. And Landy, I got to say, I'm glad that you're a kid and that you're 8 years old because there's a lot of political and philosophical issues to tackle in this episode that since we're doing it together, I just get to gloss over. And I'm really happy about that because I have a feeling that if I had to get into this stuff, it would be pretty divisive because of what's going on in the world right now with you know, various viruses and things like that.
Also, I wanted to say this when you're like, and this makes the X-Men really mad. It doesn't just make the X-Men mad, like we're about to see. Bishop also becomes mad.
That's right. Yes, the X-Men decide, well, they're going to go intervene because this isn't cool what they're seeing happening. And of course, even on TV, they can see that there's some humans there that, you know, are trying to get a rise out of this crowd that's gathered. They're yelling terrible things, you know, you sick mutants and stuff, and it's we're unsafe around mutants and they're unclean and all that. And like you were saying, you know, the X-Men, they head off to intervene, and then we actually go to that scene ourselves, presumably to wait for the X-Men to arrive. And instead, you know, Bishop himself wanders onto the scene and he sees what's going on, and he sees that, you know, there's a couple people in this crowd that have begun to throw tomatoes and I don't know, cabbage and stuff. They're throwing like vegetables and trash at the building where the mutants are. They've had to close their windows and everything. And at one point, we actually see that one of the guys is one of the Friends of Humanity, and he picks up this big old rock to kind of throw towards the glass windows. And that's when Bishop comes over and he kind of grabs the guy's arm and knocks the rock out. And he's like, knock it off. You know, you're lucky that I was here before you made that mistake. And he goes up to the front of the crowd and he starts yelling like, you know, stop blaming the mutants. Mutants had nothing to do with this plague. Get out of here. And a different member of the Friends of Humanity is in the crowd. And he yells something, you know, you're just a mutant lover and you're just as bad. And he like zaps Bishop with an energy weapon, which of course Bishop's mutant power means that he can absorb energy and redirect it tenfold.
So basically he's not. So basically if any X-Men member has to like go into a place where there'll be a lot of blasts, Bishop's probably the one to do it because he won't feel it and he'll just absorb it and suit it right back. Yep. Also, I'm pretty sure like his exact words or something was like when they are like, wait, you're just a mutant lover. You're just as bad. He's like, get him. He's a mutant too. Also, the guy who like has this plague gun type thing, I caught that his name is a familiar character, Queed.
Yep. Yeah, that'll definitely come into play a little bit later on. So the one Friends of Humanity guy, you know, he zaps Bishop and Bishop absorbs it and he's like, don't make me hurt you. And so he starts using his mutant powers to shoot blasts. He's only shooting them at the road. He's not shooting them at the people or anything like that. Neither the peaceful ones nor the violent ones. He's just kind of shooting the ground, hoping to scare most of the crowd away, you know, if not all of it. But as he's doing that, it looks like things are going to escalate even further because the Friends of Humanity in the crowd, they're prepared and they still want to fight back even against Bishop. But by this point, the X-Men have arrived. You know, Rogue and Storm have flown ahead and they see what's going on. And Storm kind of calls back to Cyclops like, "They're Bishop's here and they're going to attack him." And so they get to the Blackbird like flying right over the scene and all the X-Men kind of jump down. And Wolverine goes over and he kind of jumps on Bishop to knock Bishop, to knock him for a loop, knock him off of what he's doing.
Have you realized that when Bishop is blasting, except for like when Wolverine jumps on him, he's actually blasting with his eyes closed like this?
Oh yeah, he's got his eyes closed. Well, that's not a good rule. I mean, I know that he's not shooting a firearm, but yeah, it's a pretty good rule that if you are, shooting or blasting anything,
and you launching, don't want to hit the people especially.
Yeah, launching any kind of projectile, it's always best to look at what you're doing, not just close your eyes. I like that. That's pretty funny. Anyway, so I believe Rogue is the one who dispatches of the last Friends of Humanity guy. She like kind of grabs him and tosses him, but also takes the zapper from him, you know, the blaster. And at that point, you know, the rest of the X-Men are like, all right, well, let's get out of here. And in the, I think they're still in the Blackbird, and Bishop tells the X-Men about the plague. And he's like, look, you know, here's what happens. It's mutants are blamed for it, but it's mutants aren't the carriers. I don't know where it started, but you know, I came back because in my future, even though we stopped the assassination, things are still really bad. And by this point, they're actually back at the mansion, and you know, Bishop's still continuing his story. And so Beast comes in and he kind of corroborates it. He's like, yeah, looking at the sample of the virus I took, mutants are not the carriers. However, it seems to be designed that when the disease comes into contact with mutant DNA, the disease itself mutates and gets really bad. And so Cyclops is like, uh-oh, you know, this is just what we need. So he suggests that the X-Men reach out to President Kelly to see if, you know, in the meantime, while before the X-Men are able to get to the bottom of all this, if President Kelly could at least help to curb some of the hysteria that's going on. And then at that point, we actually have a scene change yet again. Okay, so next we go to the Friends of Humanity headquarters, and we see that they are ready to begin infecting mutants. It turns out they are the ones that created the plague, and they've been experimenting on it, and they finally have a strain that they believe can infect mutants. And then we actually see that the guy that's working with the Friends of Humanity, who's been like behind this whole plague idea, we see that he's a mystery kind of scary guy, because he's talking to Creed, and Creed's like, yeah, your plan's working really good, and you know, we're ready to start phase two. And so Creed walks away, and this guy's like, yeah, we're, you know, we're definitely going to get the next phase underway, a plague that will wipe out humans and mutants alike. And then his eyes start to glow. We don't know who he is quite yet. We will find out, but at this point, it's a pretty big mystery. So the next scene, again, another scene change.
I wanted to say something really quick. I want to say something really quick, though. Okay, so the first time me and Maxton were watching this episode, like, this guy's eyes change, and I'm like, oh, it's Beep! I still want to say his actual name, because then it spoils it.
Sure.
And my brother's like, nah, I bet it's someone else.
Oh.
And then we watch it, and it is the character I said.
Nice. So you guessed it.
Not surprised.
Very cool. So then at this point, there's like a congressional hearing or some sort of a scientific conference where people are talking about this plague, and Creed is there, and he's giving this big speech about how it's all mutants' fault, and it started with mutants, and they're going around infecting all these people, and the crowd's getting into it. And then we get all these cameos. Apparently, like, the whole world is watching this conference on TV. We get a cameo from a guy that looks like the Gene Janeer from Genosha, from the comic books. And then we also get a quick little shot of three other heroes, and it's Nick Fury, War Machine, and GW Bridge. And I thought that was pretty cool that all these people worldwide are like tuning in to watch this televised conference. And of course, at that point, Creed is kind of done saying what he's saying. So then Beast goes on stage, you know, in order to refute all of Creed's claims about, you know, mutants being the ones that started it and everything. And before Beast is even able to say anything, Bishop sees that Creed has some sort of like a spraying device or something like that, some sort of a genetic weapon. And Bishop just like rushes the stage, and he's like, Beast, look out, you know, and he jumps up there and he tackles Creed to the ground. And then of course that kind of sets everybody off, you know, mutants but the X-Men are there, and like the Friends of Humanity are there, and they kind of start fighting each other a little bit and everything. And you know, unfortunately for Creed, in all of the confusion and everything from getting tackled and all that, he actually, with the vial and this device, he actually infected himself with this plague instead of Beast. But he still is able to use that to his advantage. He actually gets right in front of the camera and he like rips off his shirt, and you can see that he's been infected by this virus. And he's like, you see, you know, as soon as the mutant came by me, I got sick. You know, it's all mutant's fault and everything. And then Cyclops kind of runs over to Bishop and he's like, for crying out loud, Bishop, can we do anything with you where you're not just like inciting a riot? Like, every time you're around, there's like every violence just is, you know, an outbreak. And so they head back home and they're really not pleased. But as Bishop's telling them, like, no, seriously, you have to listen. Like, I saw that Creed had some sort of a weapon. And Beast is like, well, you know, so far, as crazy as you are, or at least as crazy as you sound, and despite the fact that wherever you go, you know, violence kind of follows, everything you've told us has been true. So I'll believe you one more time. And he looks back at the video of what was happening, and he sees, when he slows it down, that Creed did in fact have something in his hand, and he infected himself. And so the X-Men are like, all right, well, as you know, it pains us to say, but Bishop is correct. So the next plan of action is Cyclops decides, well, if Creed infected himself, he's going to be getting treatment somewhere. They should kind of follow him, and they're able to follow him back to his headquarters.
If Nick Fury was watching this, then once they fight this mysterious villain, is there going to be a cool Avengers and X-Men team up?
I wish, but no. Actually, no, I don't wish.
well, that's rude. Nick Fury sees that mutants and the superheroes, including himself and the Avengers, might die and he doesn't care about it?
Eh. You know, it's a mutant thing. He's not going to stick his nose into mutant stuff. So the X-Men have followed Creed. They are now at the headquarters of the Friends of Humanity. And Cyclops tells Jean, you know, scan the building for Creed. And if he's here, we'll go in. And so she's scanning and she's like, oh, yep, I found him. But he's not in the mansion. They have this whole thing underneath the mansion. And that's where he is. And as she's kind of poking around in all the mines that are down there, she stumbles upon a really powerful mind and it shocks her. You know, she kind of screams out and falls down. She's not knocked unconscious, but it's enough to knock her down. And at that point, the X-Men decide, well, if they're going to be, you know, mentally attacking us or something, like we need to storm the mansion. So they do. They break into the mansion. They knock out some of the Friends of Humanity. Eventually, they find their way to the basement of this mansion. And the main bad guy at this point is revealed. You know, the X-Men arrive and they're ready to fight. And so the dude reveals himself. And who is this guy who's responsible for this plague, Landy?
It's actually Apocalypse.
Oh, it's Apocalypse. That's right. He transforms into his normal self and Creed is like, oh no, it's a mutant. And he starts to run away. And of course, that's when Apocalypse utters his other catchphrase, which is, you know, I am as far beyond mutants as they are beyond you, which I don't know. I like that line. Of course, the actor who does the voice is fantastic. I believe it's John Colicos. So great. And he does such a great job with Apocalypse. And of course, after Apocalypse says that, he goes into this big speech about how he's unbeatable and he is the future of, you know, life and all this stuff. It's pretty heavy. In the meantime, you know, the X-Men are kind of launching everything they can at him and nothing's stopping him and all that. And Apocalypse starts to grow and like starts destroying the mansion and starts caving in on this like sub basement. So Beast goes over and he picks up Creed and he's like, when this is all over, you know, Creed, remember that it was a mutant who saved your life. And so the X-Men with Creed in tow kind of make it out of the mansion. And we think, oh good, everything's done. You know, they've saved the day. And then Apocalypse grows so large that he actually like busts out of the top of the mansion. He's, you know, hundreds of feet tall and he lets loose with this blast and it completely envelops all of the X-Men. And it looks like he completely just destroys the X-Men. The team is wiped out.
Yeah, that's why I said that maybe this was enough to destroy, like, I hate to say this, but, like, to destroy Wolverine's skin and make his adamantium skeleton the only thing left.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's probably where, you know, Future Forge from this timeline found the skeleton. So anyway, right at that point, you know, Apocalypse seems to, you know, obliterate the X-Men. And we cut from there to our final scene. So we're back in the future and Cable has been following along with his little box machine thing, and he just yells like, "No, not Apocalypse." Because he's learned that this plague in the past was caused by Apocalypse. And we also find out that the reason why Cable's future is starting to change, and it's even worse than it has been, is because in this timeline, if the plague is stopped, because I forgot to mention, during the battle when the X-Men were fighting Apocalypse, they are able to destroy the vials of the plague. And so it wipes out the plague, so the plague no longer is a factor. But then, of course, they get wiped out. So that was the event that changed Cable's timeline. Because in Cable's original timeline, the plague ravaged the world. And we find out that even though the plague ravaged the world and made, you know, the year 2055 really bad and everything, we actually learn that it was a good thing, because eventually humankind and mutant kind are able to defeat this plague after they've developed enough antibodies to it. And it's antibodies that they need in the future in order to survive. But because now the virus, the plague, was wiped out, human and mutant kind never got those antibodies. And so now in Cable's timeline, the world is completely messed up, even worse than it was when they were at war with Apocalypse. And so Cable, in anguish, is yelling out like, "No, in order to save my future, I have to help Apocalypse destroy a past one." And I do love this part too, because as Cable is getting all of this information from this box, we get some more cameos. We actually see Colossus and Ilyana again, and we even see a bunch of members of X-Force. Do you remember which members of X-Force we get to see?
Yes, so the computer box type thing is like, thanks to Bishop, millions of mutants were saved, many were spared. And we see Colossus and his sister, and his sister said he has a plague. Yep. I wonder if it would even affect Colossus if he's in his metal form.
I don't know.
Anyway, and then we also then see the X-Force, which is the Wolfsbane. Maybe it's not Wolfsbane. Warpath.
Mm-hmm.
And Cannonball.
That's right. It's Warpath, Cannonball, and it's actually Feral. Remember, she wears like the pink clothes, and she's more of like a cat than a wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sadly, it looks like Feral has the plague because he, like, falls over and Warpath's like, "Don't worry, I got you because I'm awesome."
Yeah, that's right. They're walking together and she kind of stumbles and falls and everything. So, yeah, we see that, you know, most of mutant kind was saved, but eventually what happened is they all still kind of got sick. And by the time we get to Cable's future, humanity is dying. You know, humankind and mutant kind is kind of dying off because they need these antibodies that they never developed because they never had the plague, you know, 2000 years in the past. And that's how the episode ends, man. And so this is a two-part episode. So I think in the next episode, we get to see Cable's story. So that should be pretty good. So what are your overall thoughts on this episode, Landy? What do you think about it?
Well, I think that the events could basically, the whole ending part could be changed if Nick Fury wasn't so woo to not send the Avengers.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, if the Avengers got involved as well. But honestly, man, I don't think they had the rights to those characters.
Well, they had the rights to Nick Fury, and in the future, we see them fighting, so at least he has the rights to the future ones. Maybe he has the rights to them. So maybe Nick Fury was just being super ungenerous.
Yeah, well, I definitely think that ungenerous, as you put it, is probably one of Nick Fury's better-known character traits. So, all right, so that's it.
Missing the Avengers.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the Avengers weren't there. It was just Nick Fury and War Machine and GW Bridge. So probably not the biggest task force that S.H.I.E.L.D. can send over. So there you have it, Landy. That is season 2, episode 7, Time Fugitives, part 1. Buddy, thanks so much for coming on. I had a good time watching this episode with you. I liked talking about X-Men Lego sets and, of course, breaking down this episode. We'll have to have you back on at some point in the future. What do you think?
I liked it. Also, I like an episode in season 3, which is cool because this is season 2, and according to you, I'll come back in another season, season 3, so maybe I can get that episode.
Yeah, we'll definitely look for that and keep you in mind for the schedule, pal. All right, Landy, thanks so much.
Well, quick, I used to think that the plague was below the X-Mansion. And I was like, is it weird that Apocalypse destroys the X-Mansion and no one cares?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it turns out it was the Friends of Humanity Mansion, although they were probably on the same street. You know, all those mansions are kind of in the same place. All right. Thanks so much for coming on, Landy.
Thanks. It was my dream.
Well, there you have it, Bubs. That was my conversation with my youngest son, Landy. Like I said at the beginning, I realized that I had seen all of these episodes for the first time as they were airing on TV as an 8-year-old, and I thought it would be fun to get, well, my own 8-year-old on this show and just kind of see X-Men through those eyes one more time. And it's good to know that I'm not just watching this show with rose-colored glasses. I'm not just looking back on this show with nostalgia, that it is a great show for adults and that it still captures the imagination of young children. I had a really good time talking Legos with him as well. Like I mentioned, you know, him and I, we're a lot alike, and I grew up loving Legos, building Legos all the time. I still collect Lego sets to this day, mostly Star Wars, a little bit of Marvel, a lot of Batman, but mostly Star Wars. And his interests in Lego are so broad. He pretty much likes everything, but it was fun. You know, one thing that I would love to have, and of course one thing that he also would love to have, are some really great X-Men sets. So it was fun to just kind of let imaginations run wild with what we could see someday, you know, with X-Men Legos. And of course the episode breakdown was a lot of fun. He's a bit of a character, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect to have him on here breaking this episode down with me, but I know that he had a great time watching this episode with me. Him and his brother and I, we all got together and we watched both parts of this two-part episode. So next week I will have my older son on to help me break down part 2. So, Bubs, if you like the show and want to keep the conversation going, you can find me on Instagram at TalkinSnicked or reach out to me via email, TalkSnicked@gmail.com. I'd always love to get some feedback, you know, hear what all of your favorite episodes of season 2 are and have been and who your favorite characters are. And if any of you are Lego fans, you know, what kind of Lego X-Men sets would you all like to see, if any? So that's just my opinion. Let me know. Like I said, reach out to me, Instagram or email. Make sure, Bubs, that you also stay tuned to the very end of this episode. Check out the track Back from the Dead from the very talented musician Retcon X. Stay tuned next week. Next Wednesday, I'll be back with another Silver Samurai episode, this time covering New Mutants numbers 5 and 6. And then we will be back next Saturday with a brand new Snicktoons. Until next time, Bubs.